had a little delay this morning on account of the videotape, but I understand it's solved. We have a very interesting problem today. Wallace Budge of the British Museum Department of Egyptology in Babylonia pointed out that probably the most ancient civilization recorded on the western side of evolution was in the valley of the Euphrates. Babylonia and Phoenicia and Saba, from which we have later created the word Sheba. These civilizations were scientifically established not less than 5,000 B.C. Many believe much longer. And it was from this area that sciences in the Western world had their beginnings. On the plains of Babylonia, there were great observatories that were in ruins long before the beginning of Greek civilization. These towers were observatories, and they were also mysterious analogical symbols of beliefs that were held at that time. According to the Babylonians, the universe was a kind of mountain, and this mountain rose in seven ridges, or in seven levels. And finally, at the top was an altar for the eternal God. Each of the levels of the towers, called ziggurats, was of a different color. And various pigments were used in the making of brick or of painting the surfaces afterwards. These colors represented those assigned to the seven planets known to the ancients. More correctly, five planets and two luminaries. These planet-luminary combinations represented a ladder, its lower rung upon the surface of the earth, and its higher rung reaching up to the jewel of seven stars, the mystery of the Dipper. Actually, life to these people was a series of systematic ascents, and this system of ascending values applied to everything. It applied to the life of plants and flowers. It applied to the life of mankind, to nations, and to the planet itself. Every form of life was advancing systematically through seven steps. And these steps had to be fulfilled if the final purpose of evolution was to be attained. These beliefs were very strongly transferred to Egypt and later to Greece and Rome. And the wise men of Babylonia came to be called Chaldeans, a term that did not necessarily mean that they came from the area known as Chaldea, which was part of Babylonia, but because of their knowledge, their wisdom. The Chaldeans were the sages that governed the states, regulated the empires, and informed and instructed the rulers. All of this was part of a very interesting program, a program which had to do with the seven steps that all living things must make between their entry into this world and their departure therefrom. And regardless of the passing of time, of ages, of civilizations and the rise and fall of customs and governments, these seven steps came into prominence and were assigned to every living thing. All things that entered this world with the first step left with the seventh, and between the two were all the others in their proper sequences. Now, each of these steps was not only a symbolic pattern, but it was a responsibility. These seven steps constituted the way in which all living things mature according to natural law. And any break or variation in this pattern was disastrous to those who broke the law. These seven steps were the things that human beings and nations likewise had to understand and had to abide by the rules of the seven stars, as they were called in those days. Now, this has nothing to do with astrology, so-called. It has to do with a symbolic picture of the world as it was recorded by Ptolemy of Alexandria. And this system of Ptolemy remained undisputed until the rise of Copernicus and Galileo. And according to the Rosicrucians of the 17th century, modern astronomy does not conflict with the ancient system because they apply to two different purposes. And the ancient system is just as true as the modern system because it relates to psychological and mystical practices and policies which physical astronomy knows nothing about. So with our study of the problem, we come to the conclusion that there was a ladder of seven problems, seven things that had to be accomplished, seven patterns of laws that had to be kept, seven departments of human conduct that had to be fulfilled if the being was to pass on to the higher realms of insight. So we have this little problem this morning, and in the days of Ptolemy, the seven luminary planets, or the combination of five planets and two luminaries, were assigned as rulers of these seven steps. And these rulerships had nothing to do with fortune-telling and had nothing to do at all with the idea of the planets in their rulerships over personal destiny. The planets became the symbols of the great problems that had to be faced. And in mysterious ways, these planets were not only designating the fates of persons, they were also showing the pattern by which everything must live if it is to survive. Nature's laws were embodied in this septenary, and no one could break the rules without suffering. We are beginning now, in the last 5 years perhaps especially, to be aware of the danger of breaking rules. For some time we have lived very badly. For a long time we have abused nature. We have continued to break the normal patterns of human life, and in so doing have brought down upon ourselves one calamity after another. It is not that these calamities arise out of some mysterious evil spirit in the sky. They arise from the natural breaking of natural law. They arise from the fact that the individual does not keep the rules by which the universe was created, by which it must be maintained, and by which it will ultimately achieve perfection and pass on to still higher levels of life and patterned purpose. So in this particular case, we know that the planets represented problems. This doesn't mean that the planets bestowed these problems. They merely became symbols of them. The problems themselves are part of a great septenary of immutable principles and processes going on in life. The ancients understood this by a series of astronomical allegories, symbols, creating what is known as the geocentric system, a universe with the Earth in the center and not the Sun. Now, the reason why the Earth is in the center of this pattern is because this is where we are. And this pattern is prepared for us. It isn't prepared for creatures living on the Sun or in the galaxy. It is prepared for individuals who come into this world, into this Earth, into this natural environment. And they are the ones that have to obey these rules. And for these people, in this pattern, the ascending order of the planets and luminaries was different from that of today. It is not parallel with our modern concept of the solar system. In those ancient times, the planets ascending from the surface of the Earth began with the moon. The moon was the first. The second was Mercury. The third was Venus. The fourth was the Sun. The fifth was Mars. The sixth was Jupiter. And the seventh was Saturn. And those were the septenaries. Those were the great deities of the Olympian throne, and also show in Oriental philosophy. Now these seven constituted the ladder upon up which the human being, the nation, the world, governments, religions, everything have to ascend in the process of birth and rebirth. Birth into this world and rebirth into the natural universe toward which we are all moving. In the old days, the Sabians and Chaldeans and Babylonian seers, and it's interesting that in the latest revision of the Bible, the three wise men who came to the cradle of Jesus are restored to their original meaning. For the printed version now says the three astronomers or astrologers. They were the Babylonians coming in search of the fulfillment of a natural law. So with this point in view, we remind that in the ancient times, the different ones of these seven orbits, or seven forces, were given different year allotments. Some had many years given to them, and some a few. But with the addition of three planets to the solar system in more recent times, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, we now have 10 instead of 7 elements with which to work. To meet this command or change, it has been normally accepted to allow each of the 10 to represent 10 years of natural life. Therefore, the 10 planets, or the 8 planets and the 2 luminaries, cover a period of life of 100 years, each one having 10 years, each one assigned to a 10-year period. And through these sets of 10-year periods, all living things pass. Kingdoms pass into democracies and into chaos. Governments go from strictness to anarchy. Human beings pass from childhood to old age. Health passes from good to bad. Virtues rise and fall. Empires come and go. Wars and peace alternate. In all things, this septenary, or now brought up to a decade of 10, represent 10 periods of 10 years each. And therefore, what we're going to do now is to determine, if we can, the rules of these 10-year periods as they relate to the civilization we live in now, not as the ancient times, and also relate to the 10 inevitable divisions of human life. We not only have what the ancients referred to as the 7 rounds and races, that was part of it in the old days, but now we have the 10 instead of 7. And we have to recognize the need of coming to a new pattern of interpretation. To begin with, then, we will take the first, which was symbolized on the ziggurats of Babylon by a white platform, the lowest of the various platforms of the pyramids or towers of observation. So this is governed by the moon. So for the first 10 years of natural life, or the first tenth of world life, the ruler was the moon. Now the moon represented a series of processes that had to be followed. The moon was the symbol of water from which life comes. The moon was the symbol of the eternal mother, the great lunar goddess, Isis, the lady of the moon. It was also the same in the old rites and ceremonies, that this was the beginning of life. Now, what is bestowed by this is a very interesting pattern, and the ancients summed it very simply. The whole existence of a race or a nation depends upon the first tenth of its duration. If it is a human being, 10 years. In a nation, it may be 100 years to be one tenth of its age. But for human beings, this process extends from the first to the 10th year of life. And back in Babylonia in the old days, said if this first tenth went wrong, all the rest would go wrong. In the first 10 years, the child coming into embodiment must have certain processes fulfilled to perpetuate it. It must have all the needs that it must be developed. And the Babylonians way back in their days pointed out definitely that the first thing to help a child coming into life must be that it is wanted. It must be brought in from the need of the parent to fulfill the law of life. It must be no accident, no incident, nothing that is a problem or a worry. For if there's a worry in the heart of the mother, there will be a defect in the mind of the child. All of this early part must be right. The child must learn, first of all, to know that it is loved and cared for. It must be taught to walk. It must be taught to use its faculties. It must be taught what to eat and how to eat. It must be given all the care, love, and attention necessary to a little stranger that has come into an unknown world, a world which it has nothing to protect it but the parents. Therefore, the moment the child is conceived, a great duty falls upon the adults. And if those duties and that duty, if this is not fulfilled, the child and the parents will both suffer. This was a rule, in fact, in the days of Hammurabi, king of Babylonia, that all these processes must be sincere, meaningful, and purposeful. Now, as we go on into the child in the period of its lunar life, we also find all of the stages of unfolding consciousness, its contact with the outside world, its more intimate contact with parents, and later with friends and brothers and sisters. All these things must be fulfilled with absolute sincerity. They must be real, they must be true, and they must be important. If these are neglected, we begin to produce a generation of misfits. And that is exactly where we are today. The Babylonians were just as sure of it 6,000-7,000 years ago. After it gets a little older, then comes the problem of introducing this little one to a world in which there are still other steps to follow. All of the essentials of life were brought into manifestation and brought into purposeful existence in this period of the moons ruling the infant. We find, for instance, that Comenius, the founder of the public school system, writing in the 17th century AD, said definitely that all civilization begins with the relationship between the child and parents. Nothing else can substitute. You cannot buy a tutor for $1,000 an hour that can take the place of the natural affection of parents. Also, the parent must be a natural, honest, honorable teacher. Whatever the parent advises the child to do, it must do itself also. It must keep the rules that he gives to the child, or the child will fail. Comenius, the founder of the modern public school system, brought this out very well, and it was reaffirmed in the labors of Madame Montessori. Namely, that the first school, the first place of learning, is at the mother's knee. It is before the child enters kindergarten that its morality for life is established. This establishment may be considered as psychic. It is a communication outside of words and terms. It is something that happens. It is an almost magnetic exchange of values. But it all has to be done while the moon is guiding the infant into the next step of its development. Here we find the beginnings of religion. Religion begins in the home. The religion begins when the parents practice the commandments and also bestow from their own consciousness the beauties of the Beatitudes. Here the child has to learn to see the world for the first time. It learns the beginnings of its language, of its relationships, of its duties, of its responsibilities. And it also becomes aware of the strength of the world into which it is coming. And if this world into which it comes is not strong, the child is weakened. So in this period, all the foundations are put in. Before the child is 10 years old, finishing the lunar cycle, its character is established, its probabilities of happiness, of success, of its interest in making a contribution to life, its morality, its ethics, all these things have to be there in seed form before the second layer comes in. The years between 11 and 20 were ruled by Mercury, and Mercury was associated by the ancients with education. Here the child comes for the first time into contact with learning as such. And what is learning? What is education? Education is teaching the child how to use the experiences of the past to make the present better for all concerned. Any method of education which distorts the history, deforms or discharges the moral responsibilities established by nature, can be injurious to the child. It has to learn its three R's. It must also add another one to all the others, and that is, it must learn faith, love. It must see that education helps the individual to be better, not just simply brighter. That education is a moral, spiritual, intellectual, physical system of improving character. Any education which does not make the person a better person is no substitute for knowledge. It's an education which teaches him to keep a job or advance in business, but does not teach him to keep the rules of basic living. Thus, an education is false. So education becomes the great problem of the second period. This is the first impact of the world upon the child. The child then learns how other people live, how other people think. And if the child's personal life has not been integrated before it is ushered into this vast cyclone, its future is exceedingly doubtful. And the mistakes made in these periods cannot be rectified later. That is, not entirely. They can be helped. But those basic convictions upon which we all must learn to live and lean, all must be established first. So the end of education is to produce a good human being, intelligent in realities, able to face life with truth, able to meet the emergencies of life with understanding, with courage, and with integrity. If education does not make a better person, a skillful one can ruin the world. So we have to be very watchful and thoughtful of how we use these problems as they come along. Here's the second problem then, learning. And unless this problem is solved, we're all in trouble. And it has not been solved. There were moments when it was better than it is now. There were moments when it was worse. But the fact remains that the average individual can go from the cradle to the grave and consider themselves a success in many fields and in many areas without for one moment believing that it is necessary to cultivate personal virtues. Out to make a name for himself, out for success, all education being turned towards adjustment to a material world rather than the unfoldment of an internal potential. And yet even the educator must know that all this education and all that comes from it, all the physical part of it, is temporal. The individual will last a few years and depart. And all the things that he could take with him he has left undeveloped. And all that he must leave behind has been made important. So this is the second. To make an education that not only will go through this life but beyond, will help to make the individual a reasonable and proper member of the universal family. The same thing is true in community life, the educational system of nations. A nation which does not have an idealistic concept of education will always be in trouble. Because within the individual, when we break the natural rules of the patterns of life in which he is living, there is something in himself that objects. There is something in himself that tells him that it is wrong. But with many, many doing the same thing, he gradually ignores his own conscience. But after a while, a conscience comes through, And when this happens in nations, there are revolutions. When it happens with individuals, there can be reformations. But in every case, the beginning of learning, the fulfillment of education, is the production of a better person, not a smarter person. We must have more people who keep the rules because they understand them, rather than try to enforce them with police forces. We have to have police on the outside because the individual will not police himself. But a person who cannot police himself cannot be considered educated, even if he speaks 20 languages. There's not much more to it. Presuming, however, that he survives this period, that his education now has brought him to the threshold of maturity, then comes the third step, from the years 21 to 30. And these years are under the leadership of Venus. Now, in this period, it is assumed that the normal human being establishes a home. This is the beginning of a communal existence. This is the beginning of a democracy in nations and a sharing in personal relationships. Here, the virtue of unselfishness is strongly emphasized, and the mere fact that it is not practiced has no effect except to prevent it from being a successful union of persons. Only when the individuals involved in building homes really believe in homes, are really ready to sacrifice something of themselves for the perpetuation of the institutions they have established. Only when this happens can we have a true home. And a home that breaks up is a disaster. We have now come to the point where trying to keep it together seems more of a disaster. But this is because of the way in which we have misused the various processes of life. The home, the family, and the experiences of parenthood are of the greatest importance in maturing the inner life of the individual as it climbs the steps of the ladder of the seven stars. Here he becomes, and she becomes, the actual participant in the first universal mystery. Here, individuals repeat in a small way the opening chapters of Genesis. Here, the individual suddenly becomes a responsible member, responsible to carry on and perpetuate the society to which he belongs. He not only has to live within the rules of right conduct, but he must produce progeny that are educated in right conduct. He must pass on to the next generation the torch of proper living. So here we have the beginning, then, of the personal sacrifices. The individual giving up the luxuries for the necessities. The individual giving up a great deal of individual independence to create the interdependence necessary for a home. Here, then, relationships are refined. Relationships are brought into a more noble aspect with each other. And where this fails, where these have become merely incidents, where the career still dominates and family is incidental, we have another generation of potential criminals and potential narcotic addicts. Unless these rules are kept, the world will not and cannot hold together. And these rules are not unreasonable. They are the rules that would be naturally present if the individual had not created an artificial world and then spends his time trying to maintain it. Everything in nature works properly. And among the various kingdoms of nature, those that have proper insights, which most animals, birds, and even plants have this, will get along nicely. It is only when human ignorance, interference, and stubbornness upsets the balance of nature that all the other forms of life seem to be in disorder. So we have the establishment of the foundations of the future. It is between the years of 21 and 30 that a nation, that is in its cycle of time, that a nation ensures tomorrow. Without the future, we cannot hope to have a world that goes on. and there can be no future unless between the years of 21 and 30, men and women unite to protect the unborn generations to come. To neglect this is to end in constant war, revolution, anarchy, terrorism, and the like. Assuming, therefore, that the family is now understanding these things and is taking a proper attitude toward them, we pass to the next step. And this is the step from 31 to 40, and is under the rulership of the Son. The keynote for this particular level is career. Here the individual must establish himself in the society of which he is a part. This does not mean that he has to conform with things as they are, but he must determine the degree of his own personal life, or the life with which he is most influential. He must realize the necessity of becoming a self-supporting, family-supporting person. The individual, male or female, who comes to this period in life must begin to feel the weight of responsibility for the future and begin the process of gradually giving up a great many foolish and unnecessary activities to perpetuate that which is important. One of the keys of this is to remember that the Son gives life to everything, and also then becomes a symbol of providence. It provides. And it is the part of the person between these years to provide the necessities of life, to take care of duties, obligations, and proper usefulness to life, that the individual begins to realize that he must sacrifice something of his own pleasures in order to perpetuate the society to which he belongs. If he continues to go on as a wastrel, thinking of nothing but himself, with no ideals, no integrities, no sense of values, living only for fun or extravagance, or else living upon the bounty of the labors of others, this individual is not only a failure himself, but contributes to the grand failure of cultures built upon such a foundation. He cannot work this way and succeed himself or protect the world, for it is this discontent that arises from failure to make proper use of potential. Everyone must try, to the best of their abilities, to bring into the world children who, when they reach this age, will be aware of the proper place of mature person in the society to which he belongs. It is his purpose to be productive. It is his purpose to be self-supporting. It is his purpose to say faithfully and truly that his word is his bond. If he sells, his materials must be right. Whatever he engages in must be honestly done. And whatever he attempts to do should be with full justice to himself and to others involved in the transaction. So out of this period of adjustment comes also honesty and the light of truth gradually dawning within the person. Gradually the individual realizes that as a person he is limited and he is temporary. But there is a possibility that in those few years he has, he may change the history of his world. So with all due respect for his rights and privileges, it is his duty in this period, under the Son's rulership, to be self-supporting, independent, and to live on an integrity above money. He is entitled to what he needs. He is entitled to earn what he can. But if he wishes to be a greater earner, he must make greater contributions to the lasting good of society. Wealth that does not result from labor for the common good will produce more crime. Every abuse is a source of tragedy, and every bit of selfishness is some form of abuse, so that these things have to be taken and understood and worked with as best we can. So we'll assume now that the individual has reached that period in life when he is established in his business or established in his career, he is supporting his family, he is not wasting, he is not deceiving, he is not exploiting. He is doing what he should be doing and he is responsible, and he accepts this responsibility as a privilege and not as a nasty obligation. So from there he passes to the next 10 years, in which he is under the rulership, or the years themselves are under the rulership of Mars. Now Mars is a very difficult planet to understand. We have a tendency to assign to it the problems of war. This is not true, however. Mars is the first level which has to do with the recognition or realization of what we may call retrospection. It is during the period of Mars that the individual begins to sense the values of his own background, the life he has been through. It is a time of self-censure, self-discipline, and self-control. If it is necessary in this period, the individual should punish himself for his own mistakes and should blame himself for the tragedies he has brought into the lives of others and place a strong and positive and powerful discipline upon his own nature. It is only in this way that he can make up for the fact that he has overlooked and ignored much of his own past. He has to face what he has been and what he has done. And this is not always easy. It has a tendency to demand a reflection, and he begins to say to himself, what have I done? And if he analyzes it carefully enough, he may be terribly disappointed in his own character and in his own life. Because he can only count as assets those things by which his actions have assisted others. Actions which are for himself alone are not allowable on this level. If that is not understood, the level itself becomes a very painful experience. So from 1 to 10, adjustment to the world. From 10 to 20, education. From 20 to 30, establishment of family. From 30 to 40, establishment of career. From 40 to 50, Mars. Mars now begins to assert itself, because the individual has less likelihood of starting new ventures or of breaking through the patterns. What begins at this time is retributional reactions. From 40 to 50, the first aches and pains may begin. The first disappointments may show up. There is danger of the broken home. There is danger of the rebellious child. There is danger also of the slowing down of bodily functions because of excesses. So the person at that time has to have the lesser climacteric. And if this does not count, then he goes on a little longer. But a great number of dissipated people, people who are perverse and have neglected to take care of their own integrities, enter into the period of the smaller climacteric, which occurs in the 40s. And it's when very many people who have lived too recklessly find this a period of extreme danger and the beginning of the realization that man lives not by his body or for his body alone, because his body is beginning to show a little wear and tear. And this he must face. Not just simply accept the fact he is getting older, but accept the fact that he is forced by nature to accept the purpose for his own existence, which he may have denied entirely up to that period in his life. He would not want to acknowledge that he had anything more important than what he was wanting to do. He may then begin to relent a little bit from some of his pressures, and he may also begin to realize that he has wasted too many hours on television or on other things of this nature. He has not realized that time wasted is time lost. He doesn't realize that he has an allotment and is using it more rapidly than he should. He has now come to a point where he might be a wiser person, but he hasn't prepared for it. So that as he loses his grip upon certain material situations, his life becomes less and less important to him because he has built nothing else. So this begins to be a source of conflict, a source of repentance in some cases, a source of conversion in others. The individual, for the first time, becomes aware of the fact that he was the captain of his own destiny and is on his way to wreck the ship. This type of realization comes rather useful and becomes important at this stage in life. Now, as he goes on, he comes under the rulership of the planet Jupiter for the next 10 years. Now, Jupiter has several values. Jupiter suggests the height of his career. It suggests that he now comes face to face with the fact that he has, what we may say, made his little pile and is going to sit on it the rest of his life. But when he decides to do this, he may find that he's not doing as well as he expected. He is now being faced with a new challenge of sharing, a new challenge of meaningfulness. He has the probably most that he will have during this period. Is he doing the most with it? Is he wasting that which he has earned at such high cost to himself? Has he become so involved in the accumulation of wealth that he does not know what to do with his own inner life? Has he sacrificed the inside for the outside? And now suddenly discovers that the old outside is beginning to show signs of wear and tear. The person very often has very doubtful thoughts about this matter. The possibilities of continuing a gay and happy and carefree and worthless life, the possibilities of continuing in are growing dimmer. He realizes that there are things he has to do, and he'd better start doing them if he intends to. The worst thing he can do is leave a great fortune to his children, and that's right, ruin them. Because while making the fortune, he neglected them as people. He turned them to servants. He gave them a wonderful education, sent them to Europe, never let them do a day's honest work, and when the time comes to turn a fortune over to them, they will waste it, or do worse. They will find that these problems come slowly in under Jupiter, which is a thoughtful, philosophical level of contemplation. It is a period in which the person suddenly becomes aware of religious values, becomes involved in the repentances for previous mistakes, and also finds memory a burden upon his soul. All these things he has to work out during that period of 10 years. In that, he has to put himself in order. Also, in this particular period, he may come to retirement. He may come to the time when he is no longer going to be part of the rat race, where he is going to settle back and enjoy life. But as he has never done anything enjoyable up to now, what is he going to enjoy from here on out? Not much of anything. He thinks he will travel. After the first trip, he's bored. He thinks he will take up a study. After the first page, he will realize his memory is tired. Little by little, he will sink into a kind of exhaustion in which nothing is important except comfort. And Jupiter is very comfort-loving. But being comfort-loving is very often worthless so far as contributing to the good of anything. He may become very generous and good grandfatherly type of person, but his own inner life may not have been brought one closer to attainment than it was when he was 5 years old. It's always the problem of what we bring forward to the new period that determines whether we have something ahead worth working for.